With a ringing of that old school bell, we bring you back to the Warren County Radio Bible School. And we're doing a study of Paul in Ephesus. Now, you all want to get your Bible and turn to Acts chapter 19 and follow along with us as we do this study. As we were concluding the last class, we were reading a description of the great temple of the goddess Diana that was found in Ephesus. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And as I read this description to you, you'll appreciate why it has that designation. And we'll do that in just a moment. We're reading this from the little Sunday school book I have that was written for the Sunday schools of 1925 by E.A. Elam. It's called Elam's Notes on Bible School Lessons. And this is the lesson was written for the Sunday schools of October the 25th, 1925. Before I read that description of Diana's temple, I'll remind you, the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. I'm Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now let me read you this description, and this is actually came, I think, from the writings of J.W. McGarvey. It says here, "This temple," now this is the temple to the goddess Diana at Ephesus, "this temple was one of the seven wonders of the world and the glory of the city of Ephesus. It was 425 feet long and 220 feet wide. All around this vast space stood a row of white marble columns 60 feet high and less than 4 feet apart. They were 120 in number, and they supported an elaborature of vast marble slabs which constituted the roof of the peristyle. The interior was adorned with paintings and with sculptured figures wrought by the most famous artist of antiquity, and an inner sanctuary contained a rude image of a many-breasted woman, the symbol of fecundity, which was believed to have been dropped from heaven by Jupiter. Three or four temples like Solomon's could have been placed within the circuit of its magnificent colonnade. No wonder that the wrath of the heathen populace was kindled against Paul when it appeared that by his preaching this magnificent structure was to be brought into contempt. In the bill of speech, Demetrius stated clearly the facts in the case. Paul taught this, and there was a danger of these men losing their craft, their goddess and her temple. These silver shrines of Diana were miniature representations of this temple, enclosed with a small image of the goddess. The sale of these brought in no little gain to the craftsmen. Like many professed Christians, they had turned religious things into a way of gain. Demetrius, in his speech, put his business first and his religion second. First, our trade is in danger. Second, the temple of the great goddess. And third, the goddess herself. And so we read in Acts chapter 19 and verse 29. "The city was filled with confusion, and they rushed with one accord into the theater, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, men of Macedonia, Paul's companions in travel." Well, it was the cry of the craftsmen mentioned in the previous verse. Great is Diana of the Ephesians that stirred up the mob and raised this riot. They seized Gaius and Aristarchus. Now, they were companions of Paul in travel, and they rushed into the theater. The theater was built on the side of a lofty hill, with seats rising in long succession one above another, and like all similar edifices among the ancients, it was entirely open to the sky. You can go to Ephesus now and sit in that very theater where these craftsmen sat and yelled out, "Great is Diana the Ephesians." They rushed into the theater because there was not room in the narrow streets common to all Asiatic cities for such a multitude. That theater still remains with its marble seats intact. By far, the best preserved ruin on the site of Ephesus. It was capable of seating several thousand spectators. And when this author visited the spot in 1879, he took solemn pleasure in standing on one of the highest tiers of marble seats and repeating to his companions the speech of the town clerk, which follows below. Now let's read Acts chapter 19, verses 30 through 34. If you turn to that text, Acts 19, 30 through 34. And when Paul was minded to enter into the people, the disciples suffered him not. And certain also of the Asiarchs, being his friends, sent unto him and besought him not to adventure himself into the theater. Some therefore cried one thing and some another, for the assembly was in confusion, and the more part knew not wherefore they were come together. And they brought Alexander out of the multitude, and the Jews putting him forward. And Alexander beckoned with the hand and would have made defense of the people, but they perceived he was a Jew. All with one voice, about the space of 2 hours, cried out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." Paul was a brave, heroic man. When he knew his companions had been dragged by the mob into the theater, he was minded to enter into the people. He was not afraid. He would not have his companions suffer in his stead, and he would use the occasion to preach the gospel to the people. Yet he was not rash, and he yielded to the judgment of others. The disciples suffered him not. Some of those who were not disciples, but Paul's friends, that sent unto him and besought him not to adventure himself into the theater. They had two objects. They did not wish Paul hurt, and they were afraid his presence would excite the fury of the mob and render it more difficult to restrain. The leaders stirred up this mob and directed it as they would have it, but the assembly was in confusion, and the more part knew not wherefore they were come together. The Jews put Alexander forward. These heathens knew the Jews were opposed to their goddess. It was no different to them whether they who opposed her were Jews or Christians. So they drowned out Alexander's voice, and all with one voice by the space of 2 hours cried out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." Now we read the conclusion to this story and of Paul's stay in Ephesus in Acts chapter 19, verses 35 through 41. It says, "And when the town clerk had quieted the multitude, he said, 'Ye men of Ephesus, what man is there who knoweth not that this city of the Ephesians is temple keeper of the great Diana, and the image which fell down from Jupiter? Seeing then that these things cannot be gainsaid, you ought to be quiet and do nothing rash, for you have brought thither these men, who are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of our goddess. If therefore Demetrius and the craftsmen that are with him have a matter against any man, the courts are open, and there are the proconsuls. Let them accuse one another. But if you seek anything about other matters, it shall be settled in the regular assembly. For indeed, we are in danger to be accused concerning this day's riot, that there be no cause for it. And as touching it, we shall not be able to give account of this concourse.' And when he had thus spoken, he dismissed the assembly." Now the town clerk was an officer of considerable authority, and it said he stood next to an officer about like our mayors. He kept the record of the affairs of the city and made proper reports to the authorities. when the mob had expended its energy and force in this outcry for 2 hours. He then quieted the multitude by the very judicious speech which follows. He exhorted them to be quiet, because, he said, knew that all that the city of the Ephesians was temple keeper, the great Diana, and of the image which fell down from Jupiter. They believed this image fell from Jupiter, and thus assured them that there was no danger that her worship would be forsaken. Since these things could not be gainsaid, they should do nothing rash. For you've brought into this theater these men, Gaius and Aristarchus, and they are neither robbers of temples nor blasphemers of our goddess. He passed over the charge that these men denied that there were no gods made with hands, but his statement seemed satisfactory to the more part, who knew not why they were there. He suggested the proper way of settling any differences between Demetrius and his fellow craftsmen and others. If they had any charge to make against any man, let them do it in the courts and before the proconsuls. This was calculated to cause the multitude to hold Demetrius and his craftsmen responsible for this riot. Not only this, but other matters should be settled in the regular assembly, and that'd be the lawful assembly, and not by mob violence. It was an offense against the Roman government or law to incite a riot, and therefore the town clerk suggested that they were in danger of being accused of riot, and they would not be able to give any cause for it. Having quieted the mob by this speech, he dismissed the assembly, and order was restored. This speech is a model of popular harangue. Such excitement on the part of the Ephesians was undignified, and they stood above all suspicion in religious matters. It was justifiable, as that they could establish nothing against these men, and it was necessary, as other means of redress were open to them. And finally, if neither pride nor justice availed anything, fear of the Roman powers should restrain them. That was the end of that Sunday school lesson. And the next lesson we have in our little Sunday school book is a lesson written for the Sunday schools of November the 1st, 1925. And it is titled, The Fight Against Strong Drink. It is one of the world's temperance lessons. You must remember that in 1925, this was the time of prohibition. And the problem of strong drink has only magnified since that time has been over. You find so much liquor, and you find it everywhere, not just in the liquor stores, but even in the grocery stores. And if you want to read about it, subscribe to the Southern Standard and read about it in your newspaper and see all the problems that inebriated people are causing in this county, expenses and difficulties and deaths that come from this consumption of alcohol. And so we need to be warned against it. We're going to read from the book of Ephesians, Ephesians chapter 6, and it suggests here we read 10 through 20. Well, we don't have time to read all of that remaining in this lesson. I do want to point out that the golden text here is going to be Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10. Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Well, we're going to read about taking up the whole armor of God in this lesson, and about the need to abstain from these kind of mind-altering drugs. I'll just say this, as we're coming to a close, these beverages are called intoxicating beverages. Do you hear the word toxic in that? You should. The word toxic means poison, and intoxicating means these are beverages that poison you. Do not poison yourself by drinking alcohol. There is no drug abuse that is approved of in the Scripture. Drug use, yes, but drug abuse, no.